Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. Welcome once again. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. And I am Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday mornings 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. Right here at the beginning of the day as you're getting your day started. We continue in our celebration of Pastor Appreciation Month. Yes, we've got a few more days left here in October. And that's a good thing. And we encourage you to get over to our website, what we like to call our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. And when we say it's mobile-friendly, that simply what we're implying there is that if you bring that URL up on a browser on your smartphone, myfaithradio.com, it configures perfectly to the size of your mobile phone. Anyway, get there any way you can on your phone, tablet, laptop, whatever it is. And nominate the pastor of your church. We've got a very nice gift to give away in a drawing. In the context of a drawing at the end of this month, we'll be sending a pastor and the pastor's family on a retreat, 8 days worth of retreats put on by a group called Sunscape Retreats. So navigate over there to myfaithradio.com and nominate your pastor. We'll talk more about Pastor Appreciation Month later this morning. I've said this before. It bears repeating. I am struck by the fact that it is the height of irony. And when I say irony in this context, I don't mean ha-ha, LOL, laugh out loud, gosh, this is really funny. I mean, it's ironic in, frankly, a wincing sort of way, if you will. I wince when I say this. It's the height of irony that here in the month of October 2014 in the United States of America, as we celebrate Pastor Appreciation Month, we now have incident number two of ordained Christian pastors being threatened with arrest by their city government. Have you heard about this one? This one comes from the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a small, very beautiful city, probably more accurately described as a small, very beautiful town in the northern region of Idaho, not too far from the Canadian border. It's hundreds of miles away from the capital city of Boise, which is where most of the population of Idaho lives, just so you know. But it's remote, it's beautiful, it's kind of a resort town. And a married couple, a man and a woman, that own and operate a wedding chapel. Their names are Don and Evelyn Knapp, both of whom actually have Christian church ordination. Don and Evelyn Knapp, they've owned this wedding chapel. It's called the Hitching Post Lakeside Chapel. They've owned and operated this facility for, I believe, at least a couple of decades. It's a for-profit business. They're ordained pastors. And they were threatened, apparently, with arrests from the city of Coeur d'Alene, the city council and the city attorney. Very similar situation. Not exactly the same by any means, but similar to the situation in Houston, Texas. They were threatened with arrest from their city if they did not begin conducting same-sex wedding ceremonies at their chapel. And we'll talk more about this in about half an hour from now. This is fraught with dilemmas. And I have said this before here on this program since I began hosting it some four months ago or so. The issues challenging us in the United States of America and throughout the world today are profoundly moral and ethical in their nature. If by chance you happen to be listening to us on the Faith Radio Network in the previous hour, in the previous half hour, we were broadcasting Pastor Chip Ingram's Living on the Edge program. And he's been going through this sermon series that, of course, has already been presented in the church that he pastors. But he's been going through the sermon series on cultural issues largely and what the church should have to say and what the church does have to say about these issues. But if you really think about it, it really has a whole lot to do. All those issues that he's addressing has a whole lot to do with our sense of right and wrong, not only as individuals, but collectively as a society and as a church. And I keep bringing this back to the church over and over again. As the church, we should have something to say. Our Christian faith can and does and should articulate a moral worldview about the world that we live in. And so we'll talk more about what Christian morality might have to say about pastors being arrested in little old Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Wow, what an amazing time to be alive, wouldn't you say? Talk more about that about half an hour from now. As we continue, home mortgage rates, in a counterintuitive sort of shift, moved downwards, not upwards, just over the last 72 hours or so. Is now the time to maybe take on a new mortgage or refi? Or is now a good time, better than ever perhaps, to just get out of debt? Our great friend David Smith from Smith Investment Management, with conventional and unconventional wisdom on finances and a whole lot of biblical wisdom as well. He joins us next. It's now 6:09. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
6:10 on Tuesday. Welcome to it. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning, 6 till 8. As you get your day started, as we seek to connect faith to life. So mortgage interest rates just went even lower, believe it or not. We are in a season, we are at a point on the calendar in the year 2014 where many of us are anticipating interest rates to start going upwards. Of course, that's been surmised. It's been anticipated for probably a bigger part of 2 or 3 years or so. But what are we to make of this latest development? Is now the time to take on more debt with really, 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 really cheap credit? Joining us to talk about it, David Smith from SmithInvestmentManagement.com. David, welcome back to the program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Austin. Great to be here.
Always good to have you with us. Listen, I have been anticipating, in fact, you have said here on this program that we should all be anticipating the U.S. Federal Reserve to raise interest rates, the main interest rates, and that in turn would raise interest rates on mortgages and auto loans and all kinds of other credit. And now just yesterday we were flooded with news reports that in some cases mortgage rates slipping below 4%. And which is counterintuitive. So I guess I'd want to start by asking, how can we explain this? Can you explain it to us? And what sets these mortgage lending rates anyway?
Well, great question. Years ago, if you'd have asked me that question, I'd have said that, you know, we have a capitalist system that establishes rates. And basically, based on the risk of lending and the availability of money, those two things would come together and establish the rates. Mm-hmm. And so that model, while it may have been true in the past, it's not true today. The Federal Reserve sets the price that we pay for renting money very directly.
Okay. So it's a government agency, and supposedly it's setting the interest rates, that is, and supposedly that agency, the U.S. Federal Reserve, the central bank of our country, was going to raise interest rates, and now mortgage rates, according to reports over the last several days, have moved backwards. Can you explain that for us?
Well, you know, it's possible that the news of the current news, the Ebolas and the Islamic State and the different things in the Middle East have caused people to believe that our economy will slow down, and that an economic slowdown is what's coming, and so they're anticipating that, and so rates are declining. That's one possibility. And it certainly, you know, could be the case.
Right.
The other, and I think more likely scenario is, you know, the Federal Reserve, their initial charge was to protect the currency. That was their first charge. Their second charge that they added sometime later was for full employment or a high level of employment. When Janet Yellen came into office, you know, she added one more, and that was just in July of this year, and that was financial stability. And so,
I don't know how you define that. That sounds very subjective to my ear.
Well, it is. But in their view, if we have, you know, systemic risk, if there's increased risk in our financial system, mm-hmm. they get to take they take measures to protect the system. And right now what that means is they will buy government bonds or mortgage bonds directly, which they have done very aggressively recently. They've announced that they're backing off that, and it's likely we can't see behind the curtain, but it's likely that Treasury right now, U.S. Treasury,
yes.
Through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, is aggressively buying mortgage securities to buy down the rates, like they have very significantly in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So I want to use the term manipulation, but I guess a more appropriate or a more positive spin on this would be to call this more efforts by the U.S. federal government to stimulate the economy by stimulating and controlling and triggering lending.
Exactly. And, you know, with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, after they went into conservatorship in 2008 and controlled by U.S. Treasury, since that point, they have bought $4 trillion of mortgages. So that's not a small, intrusion into the market. That's pretty significant. I mean, $4 trillion is the expansion in the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve that we've seen these last few years that everybody talks about. Nobody talks about Fannie and Freddie.
That's more than a fourth of the whole U.S. federal debt and deficit combined. I mean, that's huge. Stand by. David Smith will continue with him in just a moment. David, when we come back, let's talk about some scriptural wisdom on how to manage our portfolios and our savings and our households and families in very curious times such as these. It's now 6:16. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being with us. On this, the Faith Radio Network. Difficult to know whether things are moving upward or downward when it comes to the financial world, when it comes to the financial system, when it comes to the economy. David Smith with SmithInvestmentManagement.com. He's on our guest line, always offering conventional and unconventional wisdom on how to plan for our economic futures. David, I do note, I monitor the financial and business news media pretty carefully, and there has been increased chatter. It's only opinion, but increased opinions nonetheless being offered on CNBC, Fox Business Channel, Reuters Business News Network, those kinds of things. Increased discussion about the fact that basically the Federal Reserve's economic stimulus for Wall Street is eventually going to come to an end, and that probably sends us into an economic slowdown. What I hear you saying, based on your remarks a moment ago, is that lowering of mortgage rates may be an effort to stave off that decline and to sort of prop things up further. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, sure. Lower interest rates stimulate borrowing, and
right.
our system is has basically been net has had net increases of debt dramatically for 30 or 40 years in a row. So our system is kind of built on pyramiding more debt on more debt.
And I know you're not, as you work with individual clients and companies and households and such, you're not opposed to referencing the Scripture, pulling out the Bible, going through what the Scriptures tell us about money and finance and investing, and prayerfully considering with clients what their next move might be. Scripturally speaking, from a distinctly Christian biblical standpoint, how do we navigate this terrain? I mean, it's difficult to get ahead and to function in our economy without a credit card, without incurring some kind of debt or line of credit, as it were. And yet the staggering levels of debt with companies, with individuals, with households, that impacts us all. That could be very dangerous. What is the scriptural way to navigate this terrain as you see it?
Well, I think you start first with, our hope. And our trust, it is written in Philippians 4:19, and my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. And, further, Romans 13:8 says, O man, owe no man anything but to love one another. And so if we kind of use those as our backdrop and then go into the specific instruction, like in Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is servant to the lender.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many scriptures that talk about, you know, be the head, not the tail, you know, be the lender, not the borrower. So certainly, excuse me, in the world we live in today, you know, most people don't have cash to buy a home. So,
right.
You know, prudent debt, you know, with assets that are securing it, you know, that's fine. Even lending to others. I mean, in Matthew 5, it talks about give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow from thee, don't turn away.
Right.
So we are to lend. We are to do these things. But you know, we have an economy that's 70% based on spending, just, you know, consumption.
Right.
And you know that much of that consumption is from people incurring new debt. And you know, in the first scripture I read was in Philippians 4, talks about God supplying all of our needs, not our wants, but our needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, you know, we need to prayerfully seek God and seek His will, because it's not a time where we can just give cookie cutter answers on the different things. I mean, we need to seek the Lord and say, God, you know, with this situation, what should I do? You know, my daughter wants to go to college, and I don't have the funds to just pay it.
Right.
You know, should she go to school and come out with 120 grand in debt?
Right.
And then end up, you know, tithing 10 or 20% of her income for the next 30 years. I mean, those are not, you know, simple answers. And
at the end of the day, I'm curious to know, with some of the, I guess, the consumer choices before us here, is now a good time with these even more reduced mortgage lending rates, is now the good time to take on a new mortgage loan and buy a new house or refinance or maybe even buy a car that is incurring more debt, and yet at the same time these interest rates, they are very attractive, artificially low as they may be. I mean, this seems like in many ways a good time to make a move.
You know, with the home mortgage, I would absolutely seek out, you know, options to refinance a mortgage. You're out nothing other than a little bit of time for checking. You know, you check your traditional sources, which are the banks and credit unions.
Sure.
Today, you can go online and get some specific search engines that will look for mortgage companies that will bid on your business. And that's a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anytime you can shrink recurring expenses, that's a great thing to do. You look for, you know, the 30-year fixed, not the 3-year adjustable, the 5-year adjustable, and let, you know, you narrow the list down, and then when you're actually talking to the lenders, you force them to speak in your language, which means the payment amount and the cost for the loan.
Okay.
And unless you speak financial, you know, jargon, you want it converted to real world, which is how much am I going to pay every month, and
sure,
what are my upfront costs.
That's in the case of a refi. Taking on new debts altogether, not such a good time?
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan, and
okay,
and I you know, if you have a something that has to be taken care of, you prayerfully consider it. But I would not, other than for something where you have a secured asset, I would try to avoid it as much as possible.
David Smith, SmithInvestmentManagement.com. Some conventional and unconventional, at least by our cultural standards, unconventional biblical wisdom on managing our finances in very, very confusing times. David, as always, thanks very much. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Austin.
It's now 6:25. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning, 6 till 8. We're glad you're with us. Six 27 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. Connecting Faith is our program that airs weekdays, 12 noon Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem spoke with author and president of the Center for Parent and Youth Understanding, Dr. Walter Muller. Dr. Muller has written Youth Culture 101. He talked about the role of technology and how that plays out in the lives of teens. Listen in.
One of the things that we were hearing about a few years ago for the first time is parents would come to us and say, you know, boy, there was this issue at our local high school, and a girl and a guy got caught sending sexually explicit photos and text messages back and forth. You know, we call this sexting now. It's actually a word in the dictionary. It's become that commonplace, and you know, so much a part of the fabric of our culture. Well, when that issue is raised, we don't just need to sit back and quietly pray with diligence, and we should pray this, you know, God, please spare my kids from this. But we need to become active and from a very young age start to craft preventive measures and preventive steps that we can take to talk about healthy sexuality and the goodness of sexuality, but the borders and the boundaries that God has given us about sexuality and how to make good decisions, you know, regarding how we use social media. Certainly there are, besides just having these conversations, there are steps we need to take. So, you know, when I have a mom come to me and she says, you know, I've got an eighth grade daughter and most of her friends have smartphones. You know, should I give maybe 8 years old, should I give a smartphone to my 8 year old daughter? And, you know, I scratch my head because I think no kid is really able to navigate. I mean, adults have a difficult time navigating all the stuff that flies at us that we can go out and find that's risky and dangerous. And so, you know, a preventive measure, you know, no, don't put that phone in the hand of an 8 year old. And so I think we need to do that. And those are preventive measures. But the other reality that I think we need to be aware of is that just because those things didn't visit you when you were a teenager in terms of the problems, challenges, and choices and expectations that you and I faced when we were teens, not that long ago, by the way, in our minds to our kids, you know, it's like ancient history. But we need to realize that the teenage years and the childhood years have changed. There is a reality in youth culture called age compression. And what that means, simply translated, is that the types of things that you and I used to face when we were 18 years old, kids are now facing at 8 years old and 7 years old and 6 year old. So youth culture, don't assume that to be a teenager, an adolescent thing. That actually is something that's an elementary and preschool thing. So make, again, what I say to parents all the time is, see yourself as a cross-cultural missionary. You don't just need to know God's word, you need to know the world. And then once you know what's happening in the world, bring the light of God's word to bear on those realities that exist in the world. So yes, start young. That is a message we're really trumpeting here at CPYU.
Neil Stavem interviewing Dr. Walter Muller on yesterday's edition of Connecting Faith. Coming up on today's episode, author, professor, Dr. Justin Holcomb joins Neil Stavem to talk about his new book called Is It My Fault? A much-needed discussion about domestic violence. 12 noon Central Time today. It's Connecting Faith here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:31. Welcome to Tuesday morning. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News on the way next.
Getting your day started, Connecting Faith to Life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 6:35. And this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we connect faith to life. As you get your day started, we are fully listener-supported Faith Radio. And we appreciate your support. Come on board. Join us anytime. Visit us at myfaithradio.com. And when you do, actually, you can request what we call a welcome packet. We can send you some hard copy materials in the mail, some interesting materials and fun things, quite frankly. And you can come on board and partner with us as we seek to do what we do. Can't do it without you. 877-933-2484 is our number if you'd like to join the program. Question for you. I want to get to some calls, and I'd love to have you weigh in on this. You've probably heard this news, although it hasn't been given nearly the attention I believe it is due in the national news media. I've seen absolutely no coverage of this, and I may have missed something, but I haven't seen any coverage of this. In our dominance television news network, CBS News, NBC, ABC, those kinds of agencies, this mostly comes from, I guess I'll say, alternative news agencies and a local newspaper in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. But it has to do with a husband and wife, both of whom are ordained Christian pastors, Protestant evangelical Christian pastors, and they own and operate a commercial business called The Hitching Post Lakeside Chapel, and that they perform weddings, obviously, at their commercially operated for-profit chapel facility. And they are now being threatened with jail time and fines if they do not begin performing same-sex weddings at their business. And if they, functioning as ordained ministers, if they don't perform the ceremonies and do same-sex weddings, is basically the idea. So I guess that's the thumbnail sketch here. I'll read some of the story here. But I guess my question for you is, and I'm not asking this in a rhetorical way. I'm not asking this question. I'm not phrasing the question here to merely be provocative. I'm asking this very, very sincerely, and I'll explain my motivation here. But is this, the fact that we have pastors in the United States of America being threatened with arrest if they don't hand over their sermons, as was the case in Houston, Texas only a few days ago? By the way, with the public outcry nationwide, and I would say even internationally, the public outcry of the behavior of the city of Houston, its mayor, its city council, and such. The city of Houston government now, they are standing down, so to speak. They've taken a step back in from the ledge, and they said, oh, we don't need you to send those sermons. Let's rewrite this subpoena here. They're now going to demand other kinds of information from other people, but they are no longer targeting 9 randomly selected pastors in the city of Houston to hand over their sermons for inspection, okay? That's what happens. When people let their voice be heard, things can change, and they can change for the better. But the fact that we have now a second incident, what perceptions do you have about Idaho? Would you think of Idaho as being a pretty family-friendly, church-oriented, Christian-friendly kind of part of the world? I mean, it is so remote, and I know I've been there plenty of times. I've grown up and lived pretty much all my life in the western U.S., the perception of it is very church-friendly, very conservative culturally, politically, and so forth. Here we are in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a small, rural, kind of resort-like town in northern Idaho. And the city council there, they passed an ordinance, I believe it was a couple of years ago, and it's all done on the auspices of inclusiveness and tolerance and diversity. They passed this ordinance to make sure that people cannot be, quote-unquote, discriminated against according to their sexual identity or their gender identity or their sexual orientation or whatever it is, okay? And that all seemed fine and good. Well, last week, what happened last week? It appears as though now for the final time a federal court has overturned the state of Idaho's defense of marriage law, the statewide, actually not just a law, but a constitutional amendment in the Idaho state constitution that stipulated that marriage would be defined as a relationship, a legal contract between one man and one woman. So that legal definition of marriage is obliterated by the courts. And what happens next? Well, the city of Coeur d'Alene goes to a husband and wife and says, you know, you own this chapel, and if you're not performing same-sex weddings and blessing same-sex unions, you'll be arrested. My question for you is this. In some odd kind of way, is this a good thing? Is there any benefit? Is there any upside? Is it a good thing that two ordained ministers in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and 9 different pastors as recently as a few days ago in Houston were being threatened with arrest? Give me your honest opinion about that. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Now, let me be perfectly clear where I stand on this and tell you why I'm asking. I don't think it's a good thing at all. In fact, I think it's a very dangerous thing, it is a very disturbing thing, and I really am very grieved. I'm saddened, I'm uncomfortable, I'm disturbed about the, I guess, the lack of cohesive and coherent response to these kinds of cultural crises, and I do regard it as a cultural crisis that's going on in America. There seems to be a lack of cohesive and consistent response to these things collectively from the Christian community in the United States of America. But it seems to me that there are a lot of people in my midst. My concern here, I think I'm clearly in the minority on this. And if you vehemently disagree with me, you don't think this is a crisis, I respectfully ask you to please weigh in. I mean, we can agree to disagree on these kinds of things. I welcome you to join the program and articulate your view of this. But please accept me for who I am and my concern. I hope my concern in calling this a crisis does not alarm or chase anybody away. Here's what I observe with, frankly, most Christians around me, people at my own church, friends, extended family. My wife and son and I are very concerned about this, but outside of my own household, yeah, most of my family really doesn't care. Here's what I do hear, however, about these incidents. I hear people say things like, well, it's a sign of the times. Well, this is further evidence that we're in the last days. Obviously, Christ will be returning soon. We knew that these kinds of things were going to happen here in the last days. I hear appeals, I will describe it this way, I hear appeals to eschatology and prophecy and the assumption that we are nearing the last days. I hear this phrase over and over again, the countdown clock is ticking to Christ's return. And people kind of shrug their shoulders. These are, again, people in my own church and personal friends and extended family kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, gosh, shucks, oh my, this, you know, we knew this was going to happen. The implication seems to be that, hey, this is a good thing. Christ is on his way back here. Jesus will return to earth. Soon this is all going to be over with. And this is just, you know, further evidence that Christ is soon to return because the church is in peril. American society is in peril. I even had a missionary couple recently, husband and wife, that are retired from government jobs here in the United States of America. They've got nice government pensions coming in. They're fully, pretty much fully outfitted financially with their retirement. They are leaving the United States of America, going to be missionaries in a small country on the continent of Asia. And they told me recently, they sat down with my wife and I and met with us and were asking us to come on board as financial partners with them, but they recently met and they said, we're done with the United States of America. America is headed down the tubes. America is slouching into immorality. God is abandoning the United States of America. The United States abandoned God, so he's done with the U.S. We're never coming back. We're moving to the Asian continent, and we're moving on because Christ's return is imminent, and we want the Eastern world now to be fully evangelized before Jesus returns. And that is to say that what I observe, what I hear from other Christians here in the U.S. is, I'm done with this place. Jesus is on his way to come save us. He will soon return to earth. And all these kinds of things don't matter. But as I read Scripture, I don't know when Jesus is returning. We could be just slouching into another global dark age with Western civilization slipping off its foundations here. And we could be looking at a very brutal period worldwide for Christians and everybody else throughout the United States and everywhere else. And I tend to look at these things and say, religious freedom does matter. Having pastors arrested or threatened with arrest in the United States is significant. But is there some way in which this is a good thing? We'll get your calls coming up. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues in moments. It's now 6:45.
Conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
647 877-933-2484. I invite your comments now here in yet a second American city. It's really a town, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, northern Idaho, very rural Small resort kind of community. Once again, another incident of a city government threatening to arrest pastors, ordained ministers, if they don't begin. This time, the offense, or the alleged offense, potential offense, is not conducting same-sex weddings. And is there some sense in which this is a good thing? I see this as a very disturbing trend. But people in my midst, again, at my own church, extended family, kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, you know, sign of the times. Yeah, we knew this was going to happen. No big deal here. The countdown clock is ticking. Let's roll on. Nothing to see here. Everybody move along and go about your day here. I think there is something to see here, but is there some sense in which this is positive? 877-933-2484 is the number. Jan is in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening to us on Faith 900, KTIS-AM. Jan, welcome to the program. Hello.
Well, I think the question here is do the citizens of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, think that this is a positive move? Because they're the ones that need to stand up and defend their rights. You know, the First Amendment says that not only the Congress can't make a law respecting respecting religion, mm-hmm. and that it can't prevent the free exercise thereof. So can Coeur d'Alene defy our Constitution, our national Constitution, and do the citizens care? And the other question I have is what's to prevent three men from wanting to get married? They said same-sex marriage. So now we marry three men.
Mm-hmm.
Now we marry one man and five women. This is the breakdown of the Defense of Marriage Act in progress, and I think it's a very serious matter. And I think that the citizens themselves of that city need to stand up the way Houston did. And the answer is no. We're not going to marry. Who we doesn't agree with our chapel. I mean, we own a chapel, and
sure.
This is how we do things. And if
sure. You know, part of what you're getting at here, Jan, and I appreciate the comments very much. Thanks for joining us. Part of the complexity that she's alluding to here is this is not happening in a church, in the case in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. This is not just the free exercise of religion, as to use the constitutional language. Yes, these are two ordained pastors, church ministers, being threatened with arrest, but they also own and operate a business. And this is one of the reasons why for almost 4 years now I've been hosting this program on the weekends called Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. This is why almost 2 years ago I began a version of that program specifically intended for Christian radio listeners and for Christians in America. This is why, as Christians, we need to start understanding business and economics and private property rights and private business ownership and all of these kinds of things that undergird our civilization. It's not just the undergirding of our economy and business and profitable businesses. It is the undergirding of our liberties. And I happen to think that freedom still matters. But is there some sense in which pastors being threatened with arrest in America is a good thing? 877-933-2484. Jared is up next in North Dakota. Jared, thanks for holding. You're on with Austin Hill. It's the Faith Radio Network.
Hi, Austin. Well, I'm going to counter you. I'm going to say it's a wonderful thing. Let me explain. First of all, Coeur d'Alene is a very liberal culture. So saying it's a small resort town implies it's conservative, and it's not. It's extremely liberal. I know because I'm from that area.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the reason why I say it's a wonderful thing is if you persecute the church is going to grow. And then your point about Christians just shrugging their shoulders and saying, oh, well, Jesus is coming back, shows how lethargic we are as a church in America right now. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, if you look at the times when that was written, the New Testament, Paul would say, you know, Christ's return is imminent throughout the New Testament scriptures, but he was doing it as a call to action, and they were all undergoing persecution at that time, and the church just exploded. And we see the same thing in China, and we see the same thing in other churches where the government tries and puts their foot on pastors and puts their foot on ministry personnel, and the church just explodes. So I actually am a little bit more inclined to celebrate the fact that this persecution is happening, because it forces us as a church to decide what we really believe, why we believe it, and to come up with intelligent counterarguments and work hard to, as a cohesive unit, to keep God in the forefront. So I think it's actually a good working.
Okay, now you've mentioned a couple of very important things. Your deciphering of the scriptures and noting how the Apostle Paul utilized the oppression of the era as a call to action for Christians. That seems to me, and I think you're implying this, maybe you're saying this explicitly, that seems to be almost the exact opposite of the way at least a lot of Christians in my midst are using these incidences in the United States. We're using it as an excuse for more lethargy. And I think you're juxtaposing those two, correct?
That's absolutely 100% correct. You hit the nail on the head. And that's why I say it's a good thing, because eventually we'll reach a level of persecution where people are going to have to stand up and fight for what they believe, or become lethargic and just, you know, get absorbed into culture. So,
I think that's very well stated. And Jared, thanks for the call. Another important thing that Jared just said is he noted the necessity of coming up with what... I wrote it down here. See this on this little slip of paper. I have this notepad in front of me. I wrote it down. He said, Christians need to come up with, quote, intelligent counter-arguments to what's going on. Thank you for your call, Jared. That is so important. I'm not sure that we've got those intelligent counter-arguments as yet. More in moments as our program continues. It's 6:54. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network. Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Weekday afternoons 3 till 5 Central Time. Yesterday on Susie's program, she spoke with Amani Mustafa about reaching Muslim women with the gospel of Christ. Let's listen in.
Up to this point, now you're married to a Muslim man, and he did promise you could practice your Christian faith, but that didn't exactly turn out so well. And you've got your kids, and you're forced to read them from the Quran, and you're saying, I feel like I'm feeding them poison. Maybe pick it up from there. And, I mean, I'm trying to imagine the kind of courage and conviction it took for you to walk this story out. But pick it up from there.
I mean, you have to understand, at this time, I was more of, you know, I was just there to protect the kids and raise them and make sure that I have a chance to stay with them. Because at this point, as a Muslim woman, I have no rights. And if he would reveal that I'm a convert, I would never see my kids again. Mm. As a convert, you lose your right to everything, your inheritance, you're cut off from the family. And I just cried out to God and I said, help me. And he did. He sent my mother back to Egypt, and she went to my husband and told him, hey, you guys are struggling here. Why don't you come with us to the States? And he said, okay. And miraculously, God would extract me and the kids. And my husband signed off. He told her, go ahead and take Amani and the kids first and I will follow. And I don't know why he said that. He even didn't know why he said that. And we did. Mom booked the tickets and we took off. We left.
So were you holding your breath all the way till that plane took off?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, where I lived, it was about 2 hours away from the airport. And all through the way, he was screaming at me and telling me he was not going to let us go. And telling me, I don't know why did I let you go. I'm just going to tear your paper, the release paper. You know, you're a piece of property, so he has to release you. And he would scream at me at 2 hours.
All the while you're driving to the airport.
He's driving and screaming and yelling. And I'm like, okay, all right, okay. And just, I'm thinking he's not going to let me go at this point.
Yesterday's episode of Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Today, Susie welcomes author Annie Downs to talk about her book, Let's All Be Brave. It's Live the Promise, Susie Larson, weekday afternoons, 3 p.m. Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Good morning. It's now 6:58. SRN News on the way next. You're listening to listener-supported Faith Radio.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Central Time, good morning and welcome. It's the Faith Radio Network. And I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. It is Pastor Appreciation Month, all month long during the month of October. We've got several days left yet, and we'll talk about ways in which Faith Radio listeners are showing appreciation for their pastor. Of course, one of the best ways I know how is to log on to our website and nominate your pastor to win a very nice gift, an 8-day retreat with Sunscape Retreats, a nonprofit group that puts on retreats specifically for those who serve in ministry. That would be a great way to show appreciation for your pastor. MyFaithRadio.com is our place in cyberspace. MyFaithRadio.com. Hope you'll log on and do that, but we'll talk more later this hour about other things we can do, maybe the, shall we say, the smaller things that we can do to show appreciation for our pastor. Also, an update on new details. We're learning about the threatened arrest of pastors, ordained Christian ministers, in the state of Idaho. It's I said this earlier this morning, about an hour ago, actually. I think it's the height of irony. And I don't mean that in a guffaw, laugh out loud, ha ha kind of way. It is the height of irony in a very sobering way that here in October 2014, as it is designated and celebrated as Pastor Appreciation Month around the United States and really around the world, we now have two American cities, city governments, mayor, city council, police department and such, threatening to arrest Christian pastors. What do we do? You want to show appreciation for your pastor? Maybe take measures to figure out what's going on with your city government and make sure that city government is not manipulated and used in such ways so as to arrest your pastor. That may sound outrageous and crazy. That's reality. That is the reality that we're dealing with here in the United States of America. We'll talk more about that coming up later this hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Now, here's a word that is not gone by any means from the dominant national news headlines, Ebola. How serious is the outbreak of the Ebola virus here in the United States of America, even as our U.S. federal government has, our president has appointed a so-called Ebola czar, and the Centers for Disease Control here in the U.S. is issuing new protocols and procedures to American hospitals. We'll talk about that, and even more significantly, I would say, is the deadly spread of Ebola virus on the continent of Africa. The Christian Medical and Dental Associations, those folks are taking great measures to try to stem the tide. Dr. David Stevens, MD and CEO of the CMDA, he'll join us coming up next. It's now 7:07. This is the Faith Radio Network. On this, the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support of what we do. We are fully listener-supported. Come on board with us at MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com. What sense are we to make, if any, of news headlines and even maneuverings and machinations of our U.S. federal government as it pertains to Ebola virus and its spread here in the U.S.? And how can you and I, here stateside in the United States of America or in Canada, one of the Canadian provinces, how can we make a difference to try to save lives from the deadly Ebola virus on the continent of Africa? David Stevens, MD, he is the Chief Executive Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Joining us once again, Dr. Stevens, welcome back to the program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Was in Greece for a couple weeks, so we haven't gotten together, so it's nice to be back.
It's good to have you back, and I'm glad your travels were safe. I'm glad you're back home. Give us your assessment of what has happened domestically here in the U.S. The President of the United States has appointed an Ebola czar, and that means a whole new government staff, I guess, and perhaps more importantly, the Center for Disease Control issuing new procedures for hospitals as regards Ebola. Give us your take on these things.
Yeah, let's talk about the new things the CDC is saying. Actually, unfortunately, they're catching up to what people have already been doing in Liberia and the other countries in West Africa. If you watch the pictures of Kent Brantley, who, when he was taking care of patients, he had his gloves actually taped onto his suit. His suit completely covered his face. He had eye coverage. He had a mask on. There was no skin exposed. And unfortunately, in Houston, they didn't do that. they had exposed skin, and so if there was a splash of something or something got on their skin, when they took off their protective gear, touched that area, they could get it on their hands, put it into their mouth and their nose, wherever, and get it against the mucous membrane. And so they have really upgraded to what needs to be done as far as no skin should be exposed if you're taking care of an Ebola patient, number one. Number two is that somebody should be monitoring you when you take that suit off so you don't accidentally contaminate yourself. So there's somebody there watching you to make sure you do not touch any part of the protective clothing on the outside that may have been splashed with liquids.
Dr. David Stevens, MD, he's with the Christian Medical and Dental Associations on our guest line here on Faith Radio. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, the division of our U.S. federal government, they are catching up to the procedures and the, I guess, the wisdom of healthcare practitioners in the country of Liberia. Did I hear that right?
That is absolutely correct, because unfortunately, they said just use universal precautions. That's what we normally do in a hospital, you know, to watch out for contamination from blood from AIDS patients or things like that, which is just a mask, gloves, and perhaps a gown. That doesn't mean your neck is covered, your hair is covered. And they were not doing complete protection in the Houston hospital, and that's likely how these new nurses got the disease, unfortunately.
Very sad. Dr. Thomas Friedman, the head of the Centers for Disease Control, a couple of weeks ago, while you were gone, actually, while you were out of the country, very critical of a hospital nurse and in Texas, and sort of laid blame on her for not following protocols. And she very quickly shot back in the press and said, there are no protocols. Is that kind of part of the problem that you're getting at here?
Well, yeah, there were protocols, but they were just not adequate. And secondly, they hadn't had adequate training. This kind of came to that hospital when they were still in the startup phases of training. And you need a special room to take off the gear. You need somebody observing you. If you watched, I know Kent Brantley and, of course, Rick Safer, the two doctors that got it, were treated here, are members and friends of mine. And I talked to them about the procedures that they were using there at Elwha Hospital. Now, how did they get it? They got it because patients were coming in the hospital with fevers from meningitis, from malaria, from all other kinds of diseases. And so you can't tell those from the disease of Ebola when you see somebody in an emergency room. And, of course, they were overwhelmed in their hospital. So they likely think they got it from not a patient in the Ebola unit that they were taking care of, but an Ebola patient that came into the outpatient area, wasn't recognized quickly enough, or thought to have another disease and then later declared themselves to have Ebola, and that's how they got exposed. But in this country, we don't have those diseases so much, so it's easier to identify. And, of course, the key thing is the history, and have they been in West Africa or exposed to a patient who may have had Ebola.
Dr. Stevens, how serious of a threat is the Ebola virus and its spread here on our continent, in the United States specifically, but even into parts of Canada?
Well, I think our greatest risk is the epidemic of fear that is going on.
Right.
People are very concerned about this, and really over-concerned in many ways. The risk here is very small, and the reason for that is because we have a good public health system. We have the ability to go out and find 100 people that were on an airplane with a patient and make sure that they're quarantined for 21 days. They don't have that in West Africa. Their health system is terribly broken. So, 80% of the patients that we've treated in this country have survived versus 70% dying in West Africa. So a better health system is going to help us.
Dr. David Stevens, he is a medical doctor. He's with the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, and we need a break. We'll continue with Dr. Stevens in just a moment. The CMDA, the group that he heads up, has launched an initiative where you and I can step up and be helpful, be supportive in trying to eradicate this very deadly outbreak of the Ebola virus on the continent of Africa. We'll talk more about endebolaproject.org as we continue with Dr. Stevens in just moments. 7:15, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On this, the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we connect faith to Life here at the beginning of your day, coming up in about 20 minutes from now. Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, Dr. Paul White, author of a new book on the matter. He consults to organizations, businesses all across the country. We'll talk about workplace toxicity. Not of the sort that we're talking about right now. Dr. David Stevens, MD, with the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, talking with us about the Ebola virus and its spread, in particular now on the continent of Africa. Dr. Stevens, over the last couple of weeks, your colleague, Dr. Scott Reese, who also is a medical doctor, was with us a few times here on the program, and painted a pretty grim picture of the spread of the Ebola virus and its potential to wipe out an entire country or more on the continent of Africa. Also, though, on a more hopeful note, he said, people who really have credibility, who really earn the trust of the people who need care in these countries, is the church. Members of the body of Christ are seen as a part of the solution there. Comment on that, if you would, even further.
Yeah, absolutely so. In fact, the World Health Organization a number of years ago did a survey in Africa and found the most trusted institution on the continent is the churches. And they don't trust their governments at all, and their health systems are very poor. Plus, you add to that that we have medical missionaries there who are highly trusted, know the language, know the culture. So we put together a project called End Ebola Project. You know, we kind of feel hopeless sometimes in the face of this thing, other than we can pray, and that's the most important thing. But how can I practically get involved? And the key to wiping this out is not building more hospitals. It's overwhelming the hospitals already. It's getting into patients' homes and teaching the family how to take care of their loved ones and protect themselves. And the barrier to doing that is having gloves, gowns, shoe covers, and face masks and that type of things to equip the families to take care of their own loved ones. And that's what the End Ebola Project does. It's a great project for a church or workplace where $15 can buy 3 boxes of gloves, $25 can buy 3 isolation gowns, $100 can buy 2 cases of face masks. And we're doing something in a very practical way. You know, the theme of this, Austin, is Bir Mot Kolo, and you think, what is that? Well, I'm teaching you an African language because I was a missionary there for 11 years.
And I was just thinking a little interpretation is in order here.
Yeah, Bir means actually beat, Mot means fire, Ko is, and then Lo is fire. So beat the fire while it is fire. Mm-hmm. It was actually the theme of a community health program I started where we trained over 1.5 million people how to have better health in their homes, training volunteers to teach them. And that's exactly what we want to do in Liberia. We want to beat the fire before it gets to our house. We want to wipe out Ebola before it gets to America or to other countries. And we can do that by putting the tools in the hands as well as using the church and missionaries to train people in the community because they're trusted to take care of their loved ones.
EndEbolaProject.org, spelled just like it sounds, EndEbolaProject.org is where you'll find a direct connection to this project that Dr. Stevens is making reference to. Your colleague, Dr. Reese, was suggesting, and I've seen and heard people talking about this since I last spoke with Dr. Reese, but he suggested, hey, this is a great opportunity for a church youth group, for a seniors group, for a couples group, what, an entire church congregation or maybe a group within a church to come on board and say, we will sponsor the provision of hospital gowns or the provision of surgical gloves or whatever it is. Tell us more about how you envision this working.
Well, essentially, we're going to be working through medical missionaries that are there, members, in putting these tools into their hands. That people help supply. And actually, this equipment will save lives. There's no doubt about it. This is the only way you can fight Ebola. Vaccine would be wonderful, and people are working on it, treatment, new medications would be helpful. But the way you control Ebola is keep it from spreading. And that's what this project does. We work on 279 medical and dental school campuses across the country where we have student chapters. Our students on medical school campuses, this is their project. They're working on this in their communities. And everyone can get involved and make an enormous difference. We can help stop Ebola. That's the bottom line. It just takes the tools in the hands of committed people to make it happen.
Is that going to come, that assistance that can stop the Ebola virus on the continent of Africa, will it come primarily from private individuals and organizations like churches taking steps to eradicate it, or will it come primarily from people that we don't know in Washington, D.C., sending military troops and other kinds of resources over to that continent?
Yeah, it's obviously going to come from both, but the problem is that the CDC and the government doesn't have the trusted avenue to get into the communities. You all remember a few weeks ago when a group of government people went into a village and they were actually stoned to death. The witch doctor said they're bringing the virus and the people stoned them and killed them. The church has the trust to get into these villages. They're already there. It's their neighbors. It's the people they know. And going and using them to get this in and using them to help with the training is the key. And so I think medical missions has a specific role to play that, unfortunately, the government doesn't have that trust level.
Now's the time for us to step up here in the United States, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And we got to take care of this before, you know, the risk the United States grows, the more patients that have this, the more people that have it in West Africa. They're projecting now by January 1.4 million cases unless we get this under control. And you're talking about not 3,000 or 4,000 people dead, but 600,000 to 700,000 people dead unless we get a handle on this. So the clock is ticking. Every day counts. This virus is doubling the number of patients who have it every 21 days. So it's increasing exponentially, and the time is of an essence to get this done.
Yeah, yourself and your associate, Dr. Reese, are so good at seeing the big picture on these things. You're medical professionals, yes. But both of you have articulated here on this program, and I'm sure elsewhere, the threats that is the destabilization of entire countries and perhaps a kind of global, or I should say regionally on the continent of Africa, if entire population bases are wiped out. I don't think we can fathom that happening here in the U.S. It could happen, but we just haven't seen anything like this for so many generations here in the United States of America. If we don't act quickly, what's at stake in your view?
Well, essentially the devastation. Liberia will lose a quarter of its population. That's what the numbers project, and that could happen by next summer. We're talking about over 1 million people dead. So this is a huge issue, and it destabilizes both these, all three of these countries. There have very poor health system, past civil wars. This is in urban areas. It's going to take outside help to make a difference, and you and I can do that.
EndEbolaProject.org. Just navigate over there. We've got a post on the Austin Hill in the Morning program blog with Dr. Reese and his comments and links to that. We'll do this again with content from Dr. Stevens, but visit their website directly, EndEbolaProject.org. Dr. Stevens, great to have you back home. Thanks for joining us again. Appreciate your work, and we will talk again soon.
Always good to be with you, Austin. God bless.
Thanks, you too. 725, it's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. Breakpoint with Eric Metaxas on the way in moments.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
735. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. I am Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life right here at the beginning of your day. It is Pastor Appreciation Month. We're honoring that, acknowledging that, celebrating that throughout the month of October. And some more details about that coming up towards the top of the hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Do you work in a toxic environment? We were talking earlier this morning about the spread of the Ebola virus, and our great friend Dr. David Stevens, MD, from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, I don't think he could have been more clear. He said, you know, the greatest epidemic here in the U.S. is fear. We're probably not going to see an outbreak of the Ebola virus in any large-scale sort of fashion here on the North American continent. But if we think of toxicity of a different sort, probably a lot of us would say, yes, I've been in a toxic workplace. I work in one now, or I used to work in one. It's not pleasant at all. How can you rise above that? And do we have options if we find ourselves in a toxic environment? Joining us to talk about the matter, Dr. Paul White. He's a licensed clinical psychologist. He works with individuals, businesses, and families, has for over 20 years. He's authored a book, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Dr. Paul White, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Austin.
It's good to speak with you. Let's start with the diagnosis of a toxic workplace. How do you define that? How do we know if our workplace is really all that bad?
Well, that's almost always the first question. And, you know, functionally, a toxic workplace is a poisonous workplace. It's a poisonous environment that has a lot of negative elements in it that essentially is destructive to the people that work there. On our website, you know, I actually wrote the book with Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages, and then Harold Myra, who is the former CEO of Christianity Today, and we've created an online assessment tool that's called How Toxic Is Your Workplace, at our website, appreciationatwork.com, people can go to and take that. There's a lot of characteristics, but one that I think really is practical for people is that there's just really a negative environment. I mean, there's a lot of complaining. There's sort of distortion of the truth, anger, conflict, all that kinds of stuff. And that's actually how we got to this, because in our book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, where we applied the five love languages to work relationships, as I've been speaking in training groups, I was just amazed that people would come up and say, you wouldn't believe how bad my workplace is, or what a jerk my boss is, and just the negativity was sort of overwhelming us.
I can imagine people rushing up to the podium, you have no idea what you were describing here, it's me. Probably yeah. Those kinds of experiences.
Exactly, and I loved your sort of introduction, because one of the keys is we need to not have a victim mentality about this. We can make a difference, especially as Christians and followers of Christ, that we're one thing that we can do is clearly speak the truth in love. Unfortunately, a lot of the negative examples in our book, and probably the most negative ones, actually came from Christian ministries and workplaces, because a lot of times as Christians, we either don't speak the truth, we sort of go around it and indirect, or we maybe speak it but not in love.
And I hear what you're saying there. By the way, Dr. Paul White's author of the book Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, he's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. You know, I think at times in the church, sometimes we give lip service to speaking the truth in love, but in a workplace environment where you are threatened with possible termination or demotion or any of a number of other things, if you do dare speak the truth, that can be pretty scary, pretty risky business, can it not?
Well, it can. In one of the sections, we talk about toxic leaders and what characterizes toxic leaders, and they're worse than incompetent. They're really sort of evil people. I mean, they really are narcissistic and all about themselves. And so when you're dealing with a toxic leader, and it doesn't have to be at the top of the organization, it could be a supervisor or a manager, there is a sense that you have to protect yourself. So you need to do your job, you need to document things, and then you need to have somebody, some wise counsel that you can bounce your thoughts and feelings off of, because lots of times we get fogged. But yeah, you have to be careful, because they will take you down if you're not careful, especially if something goes wrong in the workplace, they're going to find somebody else to pin it on.
Dr. White, are Christian workplaces, nonprofit Christian ministries, maybe even for-profit businesses where there is some sort of distinctly and explicitly Christian initiative at stake, are Christian workplaces sometimes worse than, shall we say, secular workplaces?
Well, I think they are. Sometimes. Not all the time, obviously, but sometimes they are, because in some workplaces, they're very mission-focused about getting the goal and task done, and that's important. But sometimes we forget that we're working with people, and people are part of the team to get there. And we can get so focused on getting the task done that we wind up using people. In fact, I worked in a nonprofit organization that, you know, they just sort of used people up, and then you were out the door, and they brought somebody else in. And that's obviously not what we want our workplace to be like. But I guess one of the things I want to make sure and emphasize is, regardless of how bad it is, and sometimes you have to get out because it's just too bad, but even in the midst of that, you know, we can make a difference to the people we interact with daily of being gracious and kind, not reacting overly to negative situations, and you know,
showing sort of the love of Christ there. But Christian workplaces can be tough because we don't confront bad behavior a lot of times. We keep letting it go, and then it just multiplies and makes things worse.
Dr. Paul Weitz, he is the author of Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Now, I should add here in a few moments, we will have a couple of copies of Dr. Weitz's book to give away. We'll do a drawing for that here in just a few moments. So stand by. We'll tell you when to call in and enter the drawing for this. Let me ask you about this, because I know this is a subject, Dr. White, that you and your co-authors addressed in the book. Essential tips for maintaining your sanity in a toxic work environment. In a moment, I want to ask you about, you know, how do we know if it's just time to leave and to move on? But assuming that we decide to tough it out, so to speak, we want to make this particular work situation, we want to make it functional, we want it to work out. Give us two or three pointers on how to survive in the midst of that toxicity.
Yeah, I think two main points. One is you need to take care of yourself. If you find yourself losing sleep, having physical problems, you're more and more irritable or depressed and withdrawn, and you're, you know, withdrawing from relationships, you're going the wrong way. So if you don't take care of yourself, we're adults mm-hmm. now, nobody else will. So we've got to, you know, make sure we get adequate rest. We, you know, take ourselves spiritually, physically, keep in touch with our family and friends. And I think that's the second point, is you need somebody in your life that you can bounce ideas and thoughts of and get sort of objective feedback and hopefully wisdom. Mm-hmm. Because in a toxic work environment, you start to get fogged, and you don't – it's like, you know, in a poisonous environment, you're not thinking clearly, and then you don't know what's – sort of reality-based and what's not, and you think, well, I guess every place does this. Well, not every place does abuse their employees verbally, and you need sort of a touchstone for somebody that can give you some reality-based feedback.
Very interesting. All right, we'll continue with Dr. White in just a moment. Again, we've got a couple of copies of his book to give away. We will do a drawing for that. We'll continue with Dr. White in moments. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 7:45. This is the Faith Radio Network. Dr. Paul White, he's a clinical psychologist. He consults to organizations and individuals around the country. And he has a book out. It's called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Now, I'll tell you what, if you'd like to win one of two copies of this book, go ahead and give us a call right now. We'll enter your name into a drawing. We'll draw a winner after the top of the hour, after 8 o'clock. Here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. The book is called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. And that's from Dr. Paul Weitz and his associates, 877-933-2484. Give us a call right now, and we'll take entries into the drawing. We'll conduct that drawing after the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. Dr. Weitz, so we're in a job. It's difficult by objective measure. Some objective measure, it sure seems like it's a toxic environment. We want to make it work, but it just seems unworkable. How do we know it's time to leave, and how do we plan those steps to exit?
Yeah, Austin, I think there's two points about that. One is, one of the ways that we found that we can turn a toxic workplace around is to help it become more positive through communicating appreciation to the people we work with. And it's a bit counterintuitive, but if you actually start to communicate appreciation to either your supervisor or colleagues mm-hmm. that are really difficult, it often can soften that, and we know that most people don't feel valued in the workplace. And so we know that just saying words doesn't work for everybody. And so that's why we wrote the five languages of appreciation in the workplace to help out with that. But I think the other deciding point is that you want to make sure that you don't put yourself in a desperate position by leaving. And it's so that you know, sometimes we're at our rope's end, but we don't have any options, and we really make bad decisions when we're desperate. And so if you're considering this, the thing you want to do is start making some plans, either getting your resume sort of up to date, maybe getting your skills improved a little bit, take some courses, so that when you need to pull the trigger, you have some options. But leaving just boom, sort of on the spur of the moment,
typically doesn't work well, unless obviously it's just a very abusive situation where it just shouldn't continue to put yourself in that.
And what do you say to that person who has maybe we can, you know, hindsight is so beneficial, but maybe as we look back, we think, okay, this individual should have taken proactive measures 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, but now they're at the point where they're saying, I just got to get out of here. What advice do you have to that person who needs to exit stage left and do it quickly?
Well, one of the things people can do is that, and I do career coaching for people, and that one is to have a sort of a stepping stone. You typically, if you're going to leave right away, you aren't going to move into another position that's really of equal responsibility and pay and all that. But you can at least take an interim position where it's going to pay the monthly bills. It may not meet everything that you need for retirement and all that, but that you can at least survive here for a while, the next 3 to 6 months or whatever it might be, while you look for that next career position. So mm-hmm. don't always think that you have to move from a career position to the next career position. Sometimes you've got to have a little bit of a stepping stone transition in between that allows you the time to find a better position.
Dr. White, I'm curious to know what you would say about this. I've got to believe you probably encountered this before, but you have workers in perhaps a Christian organization, maybe it's a church, but some sort of parachurch ministry, and they're saying, wow, our workplace is toxic, this is an ugly situation, and the leadership is saying, no, it's not. We're a Christian organization. We all love the Lord. We're all here to serve the stated ministerial purposes of the organization. Everything is just fine. How do you sort of, I guess, break through maybe some of the denial involved in that situation involving a Christian organization?
Well, I actually wouldn't try to. You know, it's difficult to change other people. What I encourage people to do is start where you are and do what you can. One of the things that can be a problem in a toxic workplace is it feels overwhelming. There's so many bad things going on. It's just like, how is this going to get fixed? But you just have to make a one step where you are, and that might be really there's two things to do. One is not engage in the negative conversations that are going. If somebody's talking, complaining, just excuse yourself and leave, and mm-hmm. then try to be positive. But I think within that, you try to find other people that are relatively healthy and are positive, and you develop a little support group, not that you're, you know, against the leadership or whatever, but it's there to survive together. Trying to change people and organizations can really wear you out. So first, get the support you need and do what you can right where you are.
I'm curious, what advice would you offer here in our final moments together for leaders of small businesses or Christian organizations, either one, the organization leader who's saying, man, I am really trying to create a healthy environment, not a toxic one. Give some advice there.
Well, yeah, and in fact, I just had an article come out in a Christian business magazine called 210 Magazine about can a Christian-led organization be toxic? And I think the thing for leaders to do is to ask themselves, really, am I treating my people well with respect and kindness? Am I being truthful and honest, and both with employees and customers? And do we have systems in place that help support that? Lots of times we found that there are three main parts of a toxic work environment: a sick system where they just don't have policies and procedures in place, or they do and they're not followed. Mm-hmm. Secondly, a toxic leader. And, you know, in the book we give the 10 top characteristics, and there's a checklist for yourself on that. And then dysfunctional colleagues, people that just blame, make excuses. And so I think taking an honest assessment and asking for feedback from at least starting with the people around you that you trust, and maybe even doing an employee survey to get some feedback.
The book is called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Dr. Paul White, he is a clinical psychologist. He's co-author on this. And you can find him and the book and related work at, and I love the domain name you picked out here, appreciationatwork.com. Spelled just like it sounds, appreciationatwork.com. Dr. White, thanks for what you do. Thanks for being with us. I look forward to coming back, having you come back and spend some non-toxic time with us as we talk about these all-important issues.
I hope to. Thanks so much, Austin. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. Go ahead and give us a call if you'd like to win one of two copies of Dr. White's book. We'll do a drawing after the top of the hour at 8 o'clock, 877-933-2484. Get your name registered in the drawing. It's now 7:54. It's Tuesday morning. I'm Austin Hill. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. On this, the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. I am in the house here at the Faith Radio Network, weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. And we take a look at the issues of the day, understanding the place that our faith and our spirituality and the scriptures themselves have in the events of our lives, not only our individual personal lives, but the turn of events in our world. I want to bring your attention yet again, and we talked about this earlier this morning, but we now have incident number two of a city in the United States of America threatening ordained Christian pastors with arrest. And over the last couple of weeks, it has been Houston, Texas that has been going through that. We've seen the outcry from Christians across the United States of America, and I would say even outside of the United States of America, in some cases, Christians from other parts of the world have said, whoa, wait a minute, this is not okay. We're not just going to passively sit back and say, well, I guess that's what we have to do. If the city hall folks say that the pastors have to hand over written transcripts of their sermons, I guess that's just, you know, that's for our well-being. No, this is wrong. This is not okay. And officials in the city of Houston, yes, the mayor and these Parker and the elected city council members, all of them, they have heard an outcry of the American people. Well, now we have another situation in the relatively small town, the small resort town of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Small community in northern Idaho, not too far from the Canadian border, from British Columbia. Beautiful part of the country. And they are threatening a couple. Don and Lynn Knapp are their names. Married couple. They own and operate a for-profit business. It's called the Hitching Post Lakeside Chapel. And yes, it's a for-profit chapel facility that does weddings. They are ordained Protestant Christian pastors. And if you want them to do their your wedding service, they can handle that for you. Well, the city of Coeur d'Alene has come down on them and said, if you don't start doing same-sex weddings, we will jail you. You will be arrested and subject to fines of up to $1,000 each. Similar response, I think, is warranted here. I do hope that you'll be praying about this. We talked about this a little bit earlier this morning. It seems to me a lot of people look at this, a lot of Christians in my midst anyway, look at this and kind of shrug and say, well, it's just another sign. The Lord is soon to return. Christ's return to earth is imminent. Sign of the times. We're in the end times. These are the last days. And that we go about our business doing absolutely nothing. I would respectfully ask you, if the pastor of your church were threatened with arrest, or if indeed the pastor of your church was arrested, would you be more inclined to maybe take proactive action? Would you be more inclined to see this as a problem, not as a good thing? And if the answer is yes, then maybe you and I can take measures, take proactive steps, and not wait until our pastor gets arrested. Just a thought. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. Coming up on tomorrow's program, John and Kendra Smiley, counselors extraordinaire, and our great friend Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. They join us, plus a whole lot more. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6 here on Faith Radio. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.